Tonight's shiur is entitled Stories from the Gemara and Bruria's Sister and Suicide is the title of the shiur. So tonight we're going to look at the story. There are two stories. One story is with regard to Bruria's sister, and the other story brought down by Rashi is with regard or regarding Bruria's suicide, which is a very interesting story also. So the first part of the shiur will focus on the sister story, and the end will focus on the suicide of Bruria based on Rashi. So the Gemara, it's the same Gemara though, and it brings down both. So if you look in source number one, it's the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Daf Yud Ches Amud Aleph. It starts there and it goes to the next Daf. And it says as follows. So Bruria de Bisu de Rav Meir, Barate de Rav Chananya ben Tradyon Havai. So Bruria was the wife of Rav Meir and the daughter of Rav Chananya ben Tradyon. Rav Chananya ben Tradyon was actually one of the Sarhugi Malchus. He was the one who was killed with the Torah scroll. He was burnt with it. So in the story in Avodah Zarah starts with an introduction to who Bruria was. So Amrlo, she said to her husband, Zila be milsa di yasva achasai bekuva shel zonos. Bruria said to Rav Meir, it's based on the English translation, I'm ashamed to have my sister in a brothel. So what happened was, just a little background, Rav Chananya ben Tradyon, one of the onshim to him, he did some. He was on a high level, but he had one flaw that he mentioned. The Gemara says he mentioned the Shem Hashem in public, and one of his onshim was that his daughter, not Bruria, but his other daughter, was taken by the Romans and placed in a brothel. So the beginning of the story here, Rav Meir's wife Bruria, who says, "My sister, I'm ashamed that my sister is in a brothel." She says this to Rav Meir. Shakal Tarkaba de Dinari Va'azo. So what happened was, basically what happened was that Rav Meir took money to go get her back, to go get her from this brothel. Va'azo Imcha, Ilo Is'avid Ba'isura, Mis'avid, hold on, just, oh, Amar, sorry, he said, Amar, Ilo Is'avid Ba'isura, Mis'avid Nisa, I'avda Isura, Lo Is'avid La'Nisa. So Rav Meir went to go save his sister-in-law, and he starts off by saying that if she's done an Isser, if she hasn't done an Isser, then a Nes will occur to save her, to help me save her. But if she has done an Isser, if she's slept with guys that she wasn't supposed to, so then a Nes will not occur. That's his premise going into the saving her. Azal nakat nafshe kichad parasha. He dressed up like a knight. Amar lo hashmi'ini li. He says to her, he approaches her in the brothel and says, prepare yourself for me. So he's pretending like he wants to hire her, and that's his plan. Look in Rashi in source number two. We're gonna read through the Rashi's as we do the Gemara. Tarkaba treg v'kav chatzisei dinari zehuvim. So he took money with him. Naka nafshe kechad parasha. His skin inyano levusho keecha mina parashim. So he dressed himself to fit in, as if you were there to hire her. Amar lo. So he said hashmini lo. So prepare yourself for me. I'm gonna hire you. Amrale, so his sister-in-law said back to Rav Meir, Deshatana Anna. She said, no, look at Rashi, Deshatana Anna, Derech Nashimli. She said that she couldn't be with him because it was that time of the month that she couldn't be with him. So Amrala, Misrachna Mirsach, he said, Rav Meir said to his sister-in-law, I'll wait for you. So he's testing her, and he says, Mirsachna Mirsach, look at Rashi, source number two, four lines down. Klomar Amtin Lach, Ad She Yifsok Lech. So he says, I'll wait for you. I'll wait till you can be with me. And I'm willing to wait. So Amrlo, she said back to him, Nefishin Tuva de Shapirin Minai. There are a lot of girls in this brothel that are better looking than I am. So she kept pushing him away. Omar, he said, Shmamino lo avda Isura. So he learned from that. He derived from this story, from his interaction with his sister-in-law, that she didn't do an Isser. Anybody that came to her to hire her, she said the same thing. She had the same line. She said that, you know, she couldn't be with them because it was Derech Nashim. And then also she said there are other girls that are prettier. She always tried to distract the guys to choose somebody else. So he derived from there that she did not commit an Avera, and therefore he can go forward with trying to save her. So it's a strange beginning of the story. We're going to just read through the story, the whole story, and then when we go back, we're going to explain it and try to break it down and analyze it. So the first part of the story up to this point is that Bruria says to Rav Meir, basically, I'm ashamed that my sister is in a brothel, and he goes to save her, but he has this plan, and he says, if she's pure, if she hasn't done anything wrong, then a nace will occur, and if not, then a nace will not occur. He sets her up. He tries to test her to see what her reaction would be. He dresses up as if he's willing to hire her, and she says, no, I can't be with you. It's Derech Nashimli. She can't be with him. So then what ends up happening is that he says, I'll wait, and she says, no, there's so many girls that are prettier than I am. There's no reason to wait. So he realized at that point that this is what she would say to everyone, and that she did not commit any averos. So Azel Legabe Shomer Dida. So he went to the guard who was in charge of the brothel. Amarle Hava Niola, give her to me. Amarle Mistafina Mimachusa. So the guard said, I'm afraid of the Malchus. The government will hear about it, the king will hear, the emperor, and he'll kill me. Amarle, so Rameir said, Shakul Tarkaba Dinara. Take some of the money. Palga palach u palga lahavilach. You'll use half of the money to bribe the guards and the government so they won't kill you, and the rest of it you'll keep for yourself. Okay, so Amrle, v'chishalmi my avid. So once I run through the money, so what am I going to do? They're going to kill me. Look at Rashi. Palga palach as a shilton, b'chol eish shialo alecha paisu b'mamon. So when the ruler comes to find out what happened to this woman, so you'll bribe them with money. Once the money runs out, what am I going to do? They're going to kill me. So Amrle, Ema. So this is another interesting point. So he said back to the guard, Ema Eloha de Meir Anani Umitatzelis. Just say this phrase: the God of Meir will save me, and you'll be saved. So that's Rav Meir's advice to the guard. Amrle. So the guard said, Umi Yamer de Hachiika. Who says that this is going to work? Give me some proof that this strategy that you have is really going to work. So Amarle Hashta Chazisa, let's test it out. Havu Hano Kalbi de Havu Ka Achli Inshi. There were these dogs that were ferocious dogs, Dobermans, for example, or a type of some really dangerous dog who would bite men, bite people, and even kill them. Shaka Kala Shadabahu. So Rameir took a stone and threw it at the dogs to incite them. Havukaasu lemechle, they're about to eat this guard. Amar Eloha de Meir Anani Shafkuhav Yahavale. So he said this phrase, the God of Meir saved me, and they left him alone. So it worked. So he knew that it worked, and the guard therefore let Rav Meir take his sister-in-law back to Bruria and save her. So Lisof Ishtama Milsa Bemalka. This might be a little confusing because there's a lot of parts to the story, but I'm gonna summarize it. So in the end, The government did hear about this. Asua Askul is Kifa. They were going to kill him. They put him up in the gallows to hang him. Amar, he said, Allaha de Meir Anani, same thing. Achasuha, they took him down. Amrule, Maihi, what are you saying? They didn't understand what he was saying. Amrulahu, Halki Hava Maisa. So the guard told them the whole story with Rav Meir. Asu Chakaku le Demuse de Rav Meir, Apischa de Romi. So they took the image of Rav Meir and they drew it on the gates of Rome. Amar Amri called a chazi le partsufa dein laisi. Anybody who sees this person with this face should bring him to us. And they wanted to kill Rav Meir for taking his sister-in-law back. Yomachada chazuhi. So one day some guards saw him. Rahat abastre, they ran after him. Rahat mikamayu, he ran away from them. Al lebezonos. So he went into a brothel himself, and it saved him. I think Rashi says asal lebezonos kadesh yomru lo hava diihu lo hava ayel. Meaning he knew that they wouldn't think it was Rav Meir if he ran into a Beis Donos, so he tried to trick them, and it worked, so he was saved. Ika de Amri, some say, Beshule ov de kochavim chaza, he saw some non-kosher food, Tamash baha umasak baha, he stuck one finger in the non-kosher food, and he sucked on the other finger, so another trick that he pulled off, and then he got away. So Ika de Amri, Asa Eliyahu, Adamiluhu chizona, the last possibility is that Eliyahu appeared like a prostitute, Karachse and they hugged. Amri chas v'shalom. I Rabbi Meir hava lo hava avid hachi. And this tricked the government, the guards that were going to take him, because they thought this can't be Rabbi Meir. He's hugging a prostitute. So come arak asal Bavel. So in the end, Rabbi Meir left and he went to Bavel to escape this persecution. So ika de Amri mahai maisa. Some say it's from this. The ika de Amri mi maisa de Bruria. And some say the reason why Rabbi Meir went to Bavel was because of the maisa of Bruria, which we'll get to after. So that's the Maisa Brura. That's the next part of the shir. So the first story is a really weird story, interesting story, in Avodah Zarah. But let me just summarize the story and try to break it down into its different parts. So the story is as follows. Berea wanted her sister to be taken away from this brothel. So Rav Meir goes and he says to himself, if my sister-in-law never committed an avera in this situation, she'll be saved and the nace will occur. And if not, then the nace won't occur. So he tests her out. It turns out that she did not commit averos and she was really trying to protect herself. So he decides to go forward with this, with trying to save her. So he tries to, he tells the guard to bribe the government and ask the guard to give her to him. And he gets scared. He's scared of the government. He's willing to do it, but he's scared. So Rav Meir gives him this phrase, just say the God of Meir should save me and then you'll be saved. And it works. And then eventually the government finds out that it's Rav Meir, who is the one who took his sister-in-law, and they put a bounty on his head. They try to get him. And there are three possibilities as to how he was saved. Either he ran into a base zonos, he ran into a brothel himself, so they didn't think it was him because Rav Meir would never do that. The other possibility is he stuck his finger in non-kosher food and he sucked on the other one, making it look like he was eating non-kosher. And the last thing was that Eliyahu appeared and hugged him, and that's how and appeared as a zona, as a prostitute, and hugged him, and he was saved that way. And then so the Gemara ends that's why Rav Meir left to Bavel, because he was trying to escape the persecution. The other possibility is Bimaisa de Berea, which we'll get to. So of course there's so many questions on the first story, the story of Berea's sister. And I brought in some sources to try to support the questions, but I think some of the questions are obvious. Does anybody have any questions before I start asking questions? What's any questions on the story, like in particular? So I think if anybody wants to, like I said, just feel free to stop me. But I think some of the questions, just to isolate some points, the first question that was bothering me in the story is this idea of of nace. So we have a principle in Shas in the Torah, Ein Somchin Al Nace, that a person's not supposed to do something with the expectation that a nace is supposed to occur. And it sounds like Rav Meir was really tying this to a nace, or the possibility of a nace. So the question is, why? Why was he even considering the possibility of a nace occurring in this situation? Why was he even thinking about that? So if you look in the Gemara in source number 3, this is just to support the question. It says, V'ha amar Rabbi Elazar, shluchei mitzvah, eina nizokin, lo b'hali chasan, v'loch b'chazi rasan. So there's a general principle that a person who's involved, or a shliach mitzvah, who's involved in doing a mitzvah, engaged in it, so he's not going to be damaged. Nothing will bad will happen to him. It doesn't really mean that. There's other many Rishonim that explain what that means. So the Gemara ends up saying, Sulam ra'ua hava, there was a rickety ladder, de kaviyah hazeka, whenever it was common for damage to occur, v'chol hecha de kaviyah hazeka lo samchina nanisa. Whenever there's the possibility of damage, whenever it's a dangerous situation, you can't rely on ace. Tichsev, ayumar Shmuel eich elech v'shama shol v'harguni. Vargani. So Shmuel says to Hashem, Hashem says to Shmuel, you need to anoint David. And Shmuel gets nervous and he says that Shaul is going to find out and he's going to kill me. So you see that from that pasuk that you can't rely on a nace in a situation of danger, because Shmuel should have said, oh, Hashem's commanding me to do this, I should do this. But his response to Hashem was, no, I'm scared that Shaul is going to find out and he's going to kill me. So you see that you can't rely on nace in a dangerous situation. So what was Rav Meir thinking here? What was the idea of even the possibility of a nace occurring? And it being tied to whether she committed an avera or not is also interesting. Why does it matter whether she committed an avera or not, whether the nace will occur? But tied to that next point, also this idea that he's supposed to save her only if she wasn't over an avera, but if she is, then he shouldn't save her. What kind of idea is that? That's a strange point also as well. Because if you look in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, look in source number 4. It says, Lefichach Nivra, this is a famous Gemara. It says, Lefichach Nivra Adam Yechidi, why was man created alone? L'amedcha, to teach you an idea. Shekol ma'avi nefesh achas misrael ma'ala lava kasav kilu ibed olamale. That anybody who kills or causes the loss of a human, of a soul from Yisrael, it's as if he destroyed the world. Because you see that Adam was the only human being, and if Adam were destroyed or killed, the whole world would not have a purpose. But if you save somebody, or if you, mekayim means to let them live or help them, establish them, so as opposed to destroy them, so then it's as if you've, being mekayim, it's as if you're supporting the whole world. So you see that there's a good in saving somebody and trying to help somebody out of a terrible situation. So his sister-in-law was in a brothel, and it sounds like he was only going to save her if she didn't do an Avera. But why is that? That's a strange point. I mean, it should be that he wants to save her just for the sake of saving her and just for the sake of taking her out of the situation. So that's another strange point. So two questions on the story, aside from all the weird stuff, which we'll get to later. But the two questions in the beginning of the story, which we'll answer, is why is Remeir tying this to Nace? What's the relevance of Nace in this situation? And the second question is, why was Remeir saving his sister-in-law tied in any sense to whether she committed an Avera or did not commit an Avera? You would think that Remeir, who's on high level, should just want to save her. Even if she did commit an Avera, it's not her fault. She didn't volunteer to join this brothel. She was taken to this brothel. So why shouldn't Remeir try to save her if she was over an Avera? So that's another question. Okay? The third question, and all these questions will come together, so we'll answer them all together and put the story together, hopefully. So the third question is this idea that it's similar, but that there's an even... look in the source number 5 in the Rambam, but it's based on the Gemara. It's Hilchosh Rotzeach Hushmeres HaNefesh, Perek Aleph Alachi Dalet, Kol Yachol Lahatzil V'lo Hitzil Over Alo Samo Adam Reachla. If you can save somebody and you don't do it, you're over an Isser, that you're not allowed to watch somebody die. V'chein HaRoes Chaveir HaToveh B'yom O Listim B'yom Olav. If you see somebody drowning, or if you see him robbers... taking control, if you can save him yourself, or you can hire somebody else to save and you don't do it, let's say he hears these goyim that are planning an attack, or he sees that they put a snare out and he doesn't tell his friend about it. So if he knows he can appease the guy, so he knows that a guy has a complaint against his friend, and he knows that he can appease the guy, but he doesn't do it. So you can't just stand by when your friend is captured. Even if this is not a pikuach nefesh situation, certainly Remeir would have an obligation, you would think, to save his sister-in-law, because either it's lo samo no dam reyacha. Yeah.
I had a question.
Fulia,
her talk says that she wasn't the same because she's embarrassed, but she didn't think because of her.
I'm sorry, say it again?
Fulia herself says to him...
Yes, that's also an important point, which we'll explain, but that's a great point. I didn't mention it, but it's going to come into the answer. But you see from Bria, what does Bria say? She says, I'm ashamed that my sister's in a brothel. It's also strange. I mean, Bria should be saying, go save her. She's my sister. Let's take her out of this terrible situation. So why does it start? Why is the story in this Gemara? And I'm assuming the story is a little literal story. It's not a medrash. So why in the story is Bria starting the story out like that? That I'm ashamed that my sister is in a brothel. What kind of idea is that? I mean, she should say, save my sister. She's in a terrible situation. Can you do something about it? So that's also bizarre. So we'll explain that, but it's a great point. Good question. So we have all these questions here. And then finally, we have to explain the whole strategy after Remeir decides that she is worthy of being saved. What's this whole idea of giving this this guard, this system of this saying that the God of Meir should save me, the God of Meir should save me, and then he's saved? How did that work? Why did he choose that? And then lastly, the three different shitas, opinions of how he was saved. And either he ran into a brothel, he stuck his finger in non-kosher food, and then he stuck the other one, or it was Eliyahu. So what exactly is the machlokas there as to how he was saved? So again, just I guess there's about 5 questions, but they're all tied to one another, and hopefully they'll all come together in the answer. But the questions are as follows. One is, why did Remeir tie this to Nace? The second question is, why was her salvation dependent on whether she was an over avera? You'd think that it's a great thing to save somebody. Also, there should be an obligation for a mayor to save. Like the Rambam says, you can't just sit idly by. Another question is, why does Bria, this is 4th question, why does Bria start with I'm ashamed? It's a little out of order. And then the last question, there's 2 more questions, and the question after that is his whole strategy to give the guard this system to save him, and then finally, how he was saved. There's 3 different possibilities, that either he ran into a brothel, or it was Eliyahu, or he stuck his finger in the non-kosher food. So it's a really bizarre story. So how do we explain the idea of the story? What the story is trying to teach us about what was going on here? So that's the question. And then, after we explain this part, we'll get to the Maisa de Bruria, which is even more fascinating. It's a very strange story as well. Okay, so let's answer. Some of the questions I think we can answer factually, but I think ultimately we're going to have to come up with some conceptual idea to explain the story. So just factually, so the question is why, one of the questions was, didn't Rav Meir have an obligation to save her? So look in the Radbaz, in source number 6. So the Radbaz was one of the commentators on the Rambam, and he says like this, V'havi yodea sheyesh b'chal lav zeh shlo yamor al hefzen mamon chavero, el ha'sheinu chayav l'hachnes atmo l'safi sakana b'shvil mamono. So if you see some your friend's money is in danger, somebody's going to steal your friend's money, you can't just stand idly by, but if it's dangerous for you, you're not chayav to put yourself in danger. Aval l'hatzil nefesh chavero o shlo yavo al ha'erva, afil b'makom di'ika safik sakana chayav l'hatzil. But when it comes to saving your friend, either from pikuach nefesh or so that they won't be over on a rios, so in that case, you do have to put yourself in danger. V'achi isa b'Yerushalmi. That's Yerushalmi's position, that a person is chayiv to save somebody else, even if there's a potential danger for themselves. But the Bavli argues, if it's really dangerous and there's a strong possibility that you might be killed, so then you don't have to. V'afilu b'safik mukhra, even if it's a clear safik, enu chayev limsor nafsho, and it's not vadai, but it's a clear safik, you don't have to put yourself in a dangerous situation. D'maycha zisa d'dama didach somek tfe, d'ilma d'ma dide somek tfe. So who's to say that your blood, or the other person's blood is redder than your blood? So Gemara says that. You're not chayev to save somebody and put yourself in danger. Aval ima safik enu mukhra elenote elahatzala, but if it's less likely that anything's going to happen to you, v'hulo yistakein v'lo hitzir, and he won't be that dangerous, and he chooses not to, avar alu samur al damirecha, then you're over the yisr. So the Radbaz is showing you, just halachically, that Rav Meir, it sounds like from the story, that Rav Meir didn't have an obligation to save his sister-in-law because it was dangerous for him, and he was putting himself in a dangerous situation in order to do so, and you're not chayev, even though it's, you're not chayv to put yourself in a dangerous situation where your life is in danger to save somebody else's. And in fact, you see that from the end of the story. The Roman government wanted to destroy, they wanted to kill Rav Meir as a result of this. So Rav Meir and Bruria were acutely aware of the idea that they weren't chayv, they weren't obligated to, and that maybe perhaps they shouldn't go because they were putting themselves and Rav Meir specifically in danger by even attempting to try to save her. So perhaps that's why he wasn't obligated to go. I'm sure he wanted to. I'm sure Bruria wanted to. But the idea was that there was no obligation to go because it was dangerous and you're not chayav to put yourself in a dangerous situation like that. But the question is, so what was the idea of Nes? What did Rav Meir, why was he relying? It wasn't that he was relying, but he sensed that there was some possibility of Ashgacha here. And why was it tied to whether she was over Aver or not? That's the question. Okay? And then we'll get to the end of the story. So I think there's an answer here. I was thinking about it. So if you look in this in the Torah in Vayikra, it's in Amor. So there's a famous halacha by Bas Kohen. It says in source number 7, Uvas ish Kohen ki sechel is no sesaviyehi mechalas ba ish tisarif. When a Bas Kohen, when she cheats, either she's betrothed to her husband or she's married and she cheats. So it says that she's defaming her father. And she gets sreifa. Her punishment is sreifa. So it's a unique punishment by the Bas Kohen if she does it, as opposed to a regular Bas Yisrael who cheats on her husband. So it's not sreifa. So look at Rashi over there. It says kisechel is nos kishetischal al ideis nos. When she becomes defamed, or nifgam. It's nischala means like what's a good word for it? It's like chil Hashem. So it's defamation. Shahisa ba zikas baal vizansa omina eris and omina hanisu, and really she's married or she's betrothed. V'rabasinu nechleku b'davar v'akomodim shol diber akasa b'fnuya. So the Torah is not talking about a pnuya, a girl who's not married. Es avia hi mechaleles chalala ubizisa es kevodo sheomer malav arur shizu yalad arur shizu gido. So when she cheats, it's not just her own avera, but she's also being mevaze. She's embarrassing the kavod of the kuna of her father, because people will say, "Oh, this is the cursed is the one who gave birth to this child. So the idea over there by the Bas Kohen is that you see that her znus is really not just a znus. It's not just doesn't just affect her, but it affects her father as well, her whole family. It's a reflection on her father. And you see this idea by Yaakov also. Look in source number 9. After Dina was taken, they say, the brothers say, Uvnei Yaakov, Bo min asade kishamam vayis atzvo anashim vayichar lahem od ki nevala asab Yisrael ishkavis bas Yaakov v'chein lo yaseh. So they were upset about the whole story of Shechem, in the story of Shechem by Dina, and they said that they were very angry, and they said that it's scandalous to take the daughter of Yaakov and to do this to her. So everyone, it sounds like in many places, these aren't the only examples, but there are many situations where you see that znus by a woman isn't just a defect in her, it's not just an avir in her, but it also impacts, and it could be a pegam for the family, especially the father. And we know that the father of Bruria and her sister was Rav Chanani ben Tradyo, and he was a very great man. In fact, he was one of the Asara Harugei Malchus. And there's the story in the Gemara before. This story talks about him and talks about how he was killed and how he was murdered. So perhaps Rav Meir was thinking, he wasn't so meichal on Nes. It doesn't sound like he was relying on Nes. But perhaps Rav Meir saw that there was a possibility of Hashgacha here. Why? Because he understood that this nus of a bas tamachacham, of a daughter of Rav Chanani ben Tradyon, would not just be a defect in her, but it would be a defect in the legacy of her father, in the idea of Rav Chanani ben Tradyon, and Bria as well. So the idea was that there perhaps would be an opening or a possibility of Ashgacha in a situation to protect the legacy of Rav Chanani ben Tradyon. Because Rav Chanani ben Tradyon was really this great man. He was one of the, like I said, he was one of the Asar Harugei Malchus. So in many situations, we do hold that there's hashgacha for great individuals to protect the legacy of a great individual like Rav Chanani ben Tradyon. So maybe Rav Meir's idea was not that he was so meichal anes, but he realized that there was an opportunity for the hashgacha to exist in this case, because he realized that if she wasn't znus, if there was no znus on her part, then the legacy of Rav Chanani ben Tradyon could be protected through saving her. But if she was znus, if she was involved in znus, even though it wasn't her fault, so nevertheless, perhaps there wouldn't be any hashgacha because it would be too late. That there would be no salvation for the legacy of Rav Chanani ben Tradyon. So perhaps that explains the question before. Why does Bruria say, I'm ashamed? She's trying to show Rav Meir, she had insight into this situation. She's trying to show Rav Meir that even though halachically you're not obligated to go save her, but there's a possibility of Ashgacha in this situation. And the possibility is tied to the pagam that occurs to the father, especially, specifically, when the daughter is involved in Znus. So in that situation, there's a possibility of Ashgacha. So even though she was saying to Rav Meir, you don't have to go, but perhaps you should go because there is the possibility of Ashgacha. There is a concept that Ashgacha might exist in this situation to protect the legacy of Rav Chanani ben Tradyon as this great Talmud Chacham. Like Rashi says by the Bas Kohen, that when the Bas Kohen is Zinsa, so people say, cursed is the person, the man who's the father of this girl. So it affects negatively the legacy of the father. So too, Bruria, that's why she says, I'm ashamed, and that's why she sends Rav Meir. Not because of a halachic obligation, but because she and Rav Meir both recognize the possibility for the Hashgacha, and that's why he needs to test her and see if she was involved in Zinsa or not. So I think that's the beginning of the story. So what happens after that? So let's answer the last two parts, and then we'll get to the Maisa de Bruria. So then he says to this this guard, who's scared, I'll give you some advice. If you want to be saved, just say Aloha de Meir. What's the word? Is Aloha de Meir, the god of Meir. Let me go back to the Gemara. Anani, answer me, umetatzelas, and then you'll be saved. So what exactly, and then there was the dog situation where he threw the stone at the dogs and then the guy was protected. And also the story with, the guard was taken by the government and he says the same thing and they take him down and they don't kill him because of that. So what exactly is that part? What is Rav Meir saying to the guard here in this situation, the second part of the story? So I think I have another idea, another possibility. There's not a lot of Rishonim or Achronim on this. I was looking up the Rishonim and Achronim, it's kind of limited. But I was thinking of another possibility. So perhaps the idea was that Rav Meir, based on what we said before, it all leads one into the next thing. So Rav Meir understood that there was an idea or a possibility of Ashgacha, But whenever there's an idea of hashgacha, you still have to provide a rational, sound advice or a sound plan, even with the hashgacha or even with the help of hashgacha. So what was this plan? So Rameir understood that the guard was particularly afraid because he was afraid that they were gonna blame him, that he was gonna be looked at as a considerable factor in saving Bria's sister. So Rameir understood that there was a possibility of distraction in this situation, that the guard was convinced that the government would seize him and that they would blame him. But Rameir was trying to show him with the dog situation that you can distract dogs. If anybody's seen any movies ever, there are always famous scenes in movies where you throw the dog meat and it throws the dogs off the scent of the person, and the person could sneak in. So I'm sure there's a lot of TV shows and movies that always depict that scene. So what's that an idea of? The idea is that you can distract people, and if you can place the blame on somebody else, oftentimes you can be saved. So Rameir was showing the guard, even though there was hashgacha was involved, but nevertheless, there was also an idea to the hashgacha. The idea that Rameir was conveying to the guard was that if you present yourself in a way where you're just, that you weren't an active participant, and somebody else was really responsible for this, so then you'll be saved, because all the blame will be placed on the other person. And in fact, that's what ends up happening. Rameir is the one who they blame for this situation and not the guard. So Rameir understood that there was a potential hashgacha here, and he gives the guard an advice. The advice that he gives the guard is to try to distract, to try to place the blame or remove the blame from himself. Stop looking so guilty yourself, and place the blame and the responsibility on another, on me, and then you'll be saved. So Rameir was trying to give him advice. So on the one hand, there certainly was hashgacha here, it sounds like from the story. But on the other hand, Rameir understood and he gave advice, logical, rational advice based on the possibility of hashgacha working. The advice was to try to distract the government and try to show them that you're not a key significant participant in this situation. So there's one last point. So the last point is, how was he saved? So I think there's machlokas there. And the end of the story was, Rameir saved because of his own wit. Basically, he figured out that he could distract them, he could run into a brothel, or was hashgacha necessary to even save Rameir? That there was nothing that Rameir could do on his own to save him, and he needed the appearance of Eliyahu. He needed hashgacha in order to save him from the situation. So the end of the story is just a machlokes on whether Rameir was capable of saving himself through his own mind and through his own intelligence, or he needed the hashgacha to save him in this situation. So there's three parts of this story. I know it's a complicated story, but there's three parts. Really, the first part is that really Rameir understood, and which is the essence of the story, which is that Rameir understood that in this story, in this situation, his sister-in-law had the possibility of being saved because of the fact that she was tied to Rav Chananya ben Tradyon, and if she was involved in Znus, it would be a pagam in the legacy of Rav Chananya ben Tradyon. But if she wasn't, so there would potentially be hashgacha to save that legacy, because Rav Chananya ben Tradyon was on such a high level as an individual. But then what ends up happening is that he gives advice, based on the possibility of hashgacha, he gives advice to the guard, that you should try to distract those who try to kill you, try to make it seem like you're not a figure, an important figure, and place the blame on me. And that's what ends up happening. And then finally, the machlokas in the Gemara is, how was he saved? Did he have to use his own chachma, his own wisdom, to try to distract the guards, or was there hashgacha that was necessary? He couldn't save himself because it was too dangerous and he wasn't able to save himself on his own with his own logic or rationale. So those are the different possibilities to how to explain the story. All right. So now the end of the second part is the Bria suicide. So this is very interesting. It's not brought down in any Gemaras. It's just Rashi. So go back to page number one on the source sheet. So if you go back to source number two, page number one, source number two, the Gemara says that there's two possibilities as to why Rav Meir left to Bavel. Either it's because of this, the Romans were after him, or it's because of Maisa de Berea. So look at the last Rashi, three lines up from the bottom, source number two. It says, "Shapam achas ligagol al she'amru chachamim nashim daitan kalosin." So one time Berea was mocking the chachamim, Chazal, who said in Kiddushin, "Nashim daitan kalos." That nashim literally it means that their das is light, their minds are light. So she was mocking them. And then he says, V'amar la chayecha, chayayech, sorry, sofech lahodos l'divrehem. So Rav Meir says to his wife, you're going to eventually agree to that this concept. Vitziva le'echad mitalmidav lenasosa ledvar avera. So he paid or he commanded one of his students to try to entice her and seduce her. V'hiftzer b'yamim rabim, and this student was very persistent. Ad shenis ratzis, until she gave in, and she was ukshenodala chanka atma. Once she realized this in herself, she killed herself. She strangled herself. V'arak Rameir machmas kesufa. Rameir left above all because he was embarrassed by the situation, by the story. So this is a Rashi over here. So again, the Gemara doesn't say what happened to Bria. It just says that perhaps Rav Meir left to Bavel because of what happened to Bria. But we don't know what happened to Bria. So Rashi fills in the blanks. And he says that what happened to Bria was that she was mocking the Chachamim for one of their statements in Kiddushin about women. And he said, eventually you're going to figure this out yourself. He sets her up by telling one of his students to seduce her. And then she finally realizes it. She kills herself as a result. Chanka atma means she strangles herself. And Rameir, he leaves to Bavel because of this embarrassing situation. So I bet you they don't teach you this story in high school. But the question is, what's this? This is a strange story. So some say, I was reading up on this, so some say that this Rashi is not a valid girsa. That it's really, this was added in later because they can't understand where Rashi gets this story from. It's not really in the Gemara. He just comes out of thin air. So some want to say that this is not a real girsa in Rashi. But it's hard to say that. I don't like taking that approach in general because when you come across something that's really difficult to understand, I don't think it's necessary to say that that it was a bad girsa if you can explain it or try to give an idea for it. But it is a strange story. So the question is, obviously there are many questions. What was her mayor doing what was her complaint against the Chachamim exactly? What was her mayor doing by setting her up in this way, by setting up a student to seduce her, and then why'd she kill herself in the end? So those are all the questions. So just before everyone gets upset at the Gemara on the phone lines, so the Gemara actually has a great amount of respect for Bria. There's many Gemaras that talk about how smart she was, how learned she was. There's a Gemara in Pesachim, in source number 10, that says, Uma Bria de Bisu de Rav Meir, Bria, the wife of Rav Meir, Brase de Rav Chanani ben Tradion, the daughter of Rav Chanani ben Tradion, de Sanya Tlasmia Shema Sasa Bioma Mishloshmia Ravasa. She learned 300 ideas from 300 rabbis in one day. Vafil Hachi Loyatsa de Chovasa Bitlashnin, the At Amris Bitlas Yarchi. So the Gemara talks about Bria's extreme ability to learn, and many times in the Gemara, Rav Meir quotes his wife. She was there's many stories that talk about her righteousness. There's a famous story about her and how her sons died on Shabbos, and she was able to craft, without telling Rav Meir on Shabbos itself, she was able to teach Rav Meir what happened after Shabbos was over, and the Gemara talks about how beautiful it was, how her mashal was beautiful. So she's very respected in the Gemara. So she's not a lightweight. So the question is, so what exactly is this story that Rashi's bringing in? Is there any explanation that we could give for Rashi? For how Rashi explains the Maisa de Bria. Okay, so let's just, so that's the question. So I think there is a possibility. So what exactly is Nashim Daitan Kalos? What is it referring to? So if you look in Kiddushin, look in source number 11. The halacha is Lo Yisyachid Adam Im Shtei Nashim Aval Isha Achas Misyachedes Im Shnei Anashim. So the halacha is that a man is not allowed to be alone with two women, but two men are allowed to be alone with one woman in terms of Hilchos Yichud. So the Gemara asks, why? What's the difference? Why is it that a man cannot be alone with two women, but two men can be alone with a woman? So the Gemara says, my time, Tana de Be'aliyah, Hov Nashim Daitan Kalos. So there's something about the nature of a woman that when she's with another woman and another man, there's more of a susceptibility to Avera as opposed to the other way. So look at Rashi on the Mishnah. In source number 13, he says, Vivnesha daitan kala ushtein nochos lispatos. So the women, they're very easily, they can be seduced and together. Velos tira zu mechaverta. One woman's not going to be afraid of her friend. She'af hi tase kemosa. That she'll do, and she'll do the same. She'll follow along. She can be seduced. They can be seduced together. But two men in Beis Nashim sha'echad bosh mechavero. One man will be embarrassed in front of his other man. The other man, there's more of an embarrassment between the two. So they're not going to be over in avero with this one woman, or not together. But by women, it's more. They're more easily. The Gemara says that they have a different psychological makeup, and it's a more dangerous situation with two women and one man. It's even then, it's there's a potential for avera. And the Gemara uses the phrase nashim daitan kalos. So what do you see from that Gemara? So that's the Gemara where Bruya, according to Rashi, mocked the Chachamim. So what exactly was Bruya and Rav Meir? What was the whole story there? What's going on here? So the last idea in the shir is that perhaps it's as follows. Perhaps the Gemara, it sounds like the Gemara in Nashim Daitan Kalos is not talking about the intellectual capabilities of women. In fact, Bruya is just as intelligent as any man. However, the Gemara is talking about the psychological nature of women. And what that is hard to define exactly. It sounds like from Rashi, it's talking about a group psychology, that the group psychology of women is different than men. But I don't want to give an... It doesn't work out completely based on the story. But whatever it is, it's not talking about the intellectual capability of women and men. It's talking about a certain psychological nature. And the Chazal were just trying to protect a situation of Yichud. So they weren't commenting in a negative way. They weren't trying to defame women. They weren't trying to put them down. But what they were trying to point out is that women have a different nature and we need to protect the situation of Avera as much as possible. So this is a situation that Chazal thought was dangerous, where two women are alone with one man. So they said, we need to protect the situation, so we're not going to allow Yichud in that situation. That is Yichud, and we're not going to allow it. So it sounds like that's how I would learn the Gemara. But it sounds like Bruya looked at it as a defect. It sounds like Bruya looked at it as if it was somehow a demonstration of a defect in her, that Nashim Daitan Kalos, and she saw it as an affront to her intelligence. Even though the Gemara in Kiddushin isn't talking about women and learning, it's not talking about intelligence, it's talking about a psychological situation where women are alone with men, which is a totally different idea than intelligence. But Bruya took it as a type of insult to women. So it sounds like that was the issue. And she, in fact, that's why she mocked the Chachamim. Why would she mock them? So she mocked them because she thought, it sounds like she had a distorted idea. She thought that the Chachamim were making a negative, insulting comment about women, when the reality was they're just realizing or observing a psychological truth in their minds. So what does Rav Meir do? So what does it mean that Rav Meir sets her up? Why would he do that? And also, how could he do that? So it sounds like Rav Meir realized that he couldn't convince her of this idea. He couldn't convince Bruya that this wasn't a defect in women, it's just a reality. It's a psychological truth, and it's not meant as a defect. So he realized that she needed to experience it herself in order to change her mind, in order to affect her. And he thought it was particularly important because she was so respected and she's embarrassing the Chachamim, she's making fun of them. So he thought that it was necessary for her to have this idea, to realize this point, in order for her to be an accurate, especially if she's involved in the Mesorah and involved in learning in the Gemara, she needs to have an accurate perspective of Chazal. So what he thought was, Rav Meir did, was that he set up the situation where she would realize it herself. So there's all these achronim that talk about how she really wasn't over Isser. Rav Meir wasn't trying to get her to be over Isser, just to try to realize this. And even though it says that he had a student, you know, try to seduce her, she never really went through with it. Some say it was Rav Meir himself that he hid himself and he pretended to be a student. But nevertheless, she realized this point. But why does she kill herself? So it sounds like once she realized that this was part of her nature, but she had this perspective of it as a negative, as something that was really insulting, she couldn't deal with it. She couldn't accept it, even though it's not. It wasn't meant to insult women, Nashim Daitan Kalos. It's meant as a psychological truth, but she couldn't see it like that. So once she accepted it within herself, because she knew that it was a part of her and she viewed it in a negative way, she couldn't handle it. And she killed herself. She was depressed and she killed herself. A person only kills themselves when they can't deal with the reality that they're faced with. So she couldn't deal with this idea that Nashim Daitan Kalos, that she could possibly be like that. Even though it's not a negative, it's just a reality, it's a truth, it's a psychological reality. So she ends up killing herself, and Rav Meir leaves because of the embarrassment. So that's the only way I can explain the story according to Rashi. So trying to rationalize the story a little bit and trying to put some interesting concepts into the story. But I think, just to summarize, the story of Bruya's suicide, to understand it, is that it's not that there was a misconception that Bruya had about... There's a misconception that Bruya had about what the Chachamim meant when it said Neshem Daitan Kalos. She looked at it as an insult to women, but it wasn't. It's really an idea that Chazal observed a psychological truth, and they were trying to protect a situation of Isser. So they had to do this. They had to make this gzera. But nevertheless, Sarah Meir realized that because she was so intelligent, he couldn't really convince her of this through arguments. So he needed her to experience it. But when she experienced it, it had the wrong effect on her. He was expecting her to do tshuva or to realize this and just move forward, but it had a negative effect to the point where she couldn't handle the fact that she looked at herself as defective or having some type of internal defect. So what ends up happening at the end is that she kills herself and Rameir leaves. So that's the only way that I could see understanding the story. So the last point is that there is one other interpretation of the story, which is much more, much tamer. And that's in source number 14. I didn't find it inside. I didn't see it inside. But it's brought down that Rabbeinu Nissim has a different approach. It says here, Rabbeinu Nissim ben Yaakov of Karuan provides a different explanation that is closer to the text. According to him, Rav Meir and Beriah had to flee Bavel after the Romans executed her father, sold her mother to slavery and her sister to a brothel, and were looking for her. So according to that, it was just, what does it mean, Maisa de Beriah? It means that they were looking for her. They wanted to kill her too. And that's the other explanation. Maisa de Beriah isn't this whole story that Rashi comes up with, but it's just the concept that the Romans were looking to get her and they had to flee because of that. Okay, so just to summarize, there's two real stories of the Shir. The first story is Bria's sister and how Rameir saved her. And the essence of the story was that Rameir understood the possibility of Hashgacha existing because of the idea that the daughter of Rav Chanan ben Tradion, if she was involved in Znus, it would have an effect on his legacy. And once he saw that she wasn't involved in Znus and that there was a potential for Hashgacha, so he utilized that idea in his plan. It doesn't mean that he relied on it completely, but he recognized the possibility and utilized it in his plan. And then the last story was Beriah. So the suicide of Beriah, I think, is tied to a misconception that she had of Chazal and what Chazal were saying by Nashim Daitan Kalos. It wasn't an idea and an insult. It was an idea of a psychological reality that they were trying to protect Avera, and they realized this psychological truth. And as a result of this misconception, it sounds like according to Rashi, Rameir couldn't convince her. So he tried to, the only way he thought that this could get to her was if she experienced it herself, but she really wasn't able to deal with it and move forward. It was troubling to her. So she wasn't able to deal with it and she kills herself in this story. Okay, so that's the end of the shir. Anybody have any questions? All right, everybody have a good Shabbos. Thank